Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staple
of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Great. It was a convincing win by the Oilers. I think they got a few breaks for once. That's for sure. Nice to see. Yeah. But a convincing win over the Los Angeles Kings. 4 goals for the Oilers. Is that what we had in the end? Three goals for the Kings. And the grade A shots in the game. Give me 1 second here and I will call up what it was. It was 16 for the Oilers and 7 for the Kings. Subset of 5 alarm shots, 5-3 for the Oilers. So the Oilers were really dominant in terms of, this was the most dominant game they were in terms of grade A shots in the game in this entire 5-game series. So they deserve the win.
I know when the Kings scored to go ahead 2-1, the grade A shots at that moment were 7-2 for Edmonton.
Yeah.
They scored on both of their great A's. The Oilers had hit a post, and the goalie made a few stops.
The luck was going against the Oilers at that point, wasn't it, Bruce? But yeah.
Well, at one point, the shots were 7-2 for L.A., and the grade A shots were 3-0 for Edmonton because they hit the post. And they had two good shots, and L.A. had a bunch of shots, but nothing that was, you know, particularly special.
Yeah.
So they did come on, and, you know, I give L.A. credit. They played hard, and they played to the end, and I was particularly impressed with Victor Arvidsson, who was all over the puck throughout the game. And he just seemed to come up with it on the boards in the offensive zone time and time and time again.
Well, he's
played his ass off. He is a good player.
He's annoying, a free agent.
Annoying player.
Yeah.
He mashed Ekholm
pretty good. Ekholm really good. Yeah, caught him.
Yeah.
Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast with one conundrum. We'll go with two good things each. What's your first good thing?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with Evan Bouchard again. He played 26 minutes tonight, 16 seconds, 3 points, plus two. I'm pretty sure both pluses came on the even strength goals that came, what were they, 4 and 3 seconds, respectively, at the tail end of two long power plays. The first unit stayed for the whole 2 minutes and just a couple more seconds to put it in. But basically three more power play goals. He played 7 minutes and 25 seconds on the power play tonight. And he blocked 3 shots. He had 6 shot attempts. He had a couple of absolute rockets that he let fly from the point, including one that bounced off Nugent Hopkins and the goalpost, and then Hyman stuffed it in for what became the series winning goal. So just another real strong game from young Mr. Bouchard, who, to my eye, he's looking like the, you know, the better player on his partnership right now, which is not what I see a lot of nights, but the last few games, yeah, he's the driver.
He's moving the puck well, defending pretty well. So what's not to like? Yeah,
he's making hard plays. So much soft happening around the edges for Bouch, like sometimes there is. And I thought both the last two games he was excellent.
Bruce, my first good thing will be it was the goal tipped in by Ryan Nugent Hopkins. I think that's the fourth goal, correct?
It actually was Hyman's goal. It hit Nugent Hopkins and then the post, and then Hyman stuffed it in from like 1 inch out.
Is that right? I'll have to change that.
Official scoring play is Hyman from Nugent Hopkins and Bouchard. And both McDavid and Draisaitl, who also were involved in the play in the build-up, wound up being shut out.
I like this play in particular from Nugent Hopkins. because it's a him going to the net. And there was a play actually earlier in the game that I'm going to contrast it to. I think it was in the first period, about 6 minutes left, and Bouchard got a hard shot on net, which went through a Kings defender and was deflected, which meant when it hit Riddick, he didn't get a clean save and he dumped the puck. And I thought that was a heck of a shot. Where was the guy in front of the net? Like, the Oilers have been buzzing and there should have been a guy in front of the net. So I watched the replay, and just before Bouchard had shot the puck, Nuge was in front of the net. And then he went to the side of the net to get a pass. After the last game, you and I had been talking about how we think Nuge needs to amp it up in the playoffs, kind of get into the guts of the game, work harder in battles. And I just think that was a perfect example of why is he doing that? You know, the puck's gone back to Evan Bouchard. Stay in front of the net and go for the garbage goal, go for the deflection instead of looking for that pass from him. And I just think if he incorporated that aspect into his game more, he would score more and he would be a more effective player. Because in these playoffs, he hasn't been particularly effective, but on this particular play, it really was a good play. He went to the net, Bouchard shoots, it goes off Nugent Hopkins. I thought it went in, but as you say, it went off the post and then Hyman put it in. So excellent play by Nugent Hopkins, like the double screen, having two players in front of the net.
Yeah, he was part of that too.
On a Bouchard shot. If you want Evan Bouchard to score more on the power play, like take advantage of that slap shot, one screener is good, two screeners better. And he should be one of them because McDavid and Draisaitl are the ones who are moving the puck around on the outside. So excellent play by him. And I just would say a more please.
Yeah, I saw him, David, as this is still under discussion, but on the 3-2 goal that put the Oilers ahead to stay, that Nuge was engaging the goalie at the edge of the crease at least as much as Hyman was. And one of the reasons that Draisaitl was able to beat Riddick was there was a hell of a lot of traffic around, and Draisaitl didn't hit the traffic when he shot the puck. And so that's... actually going to be my second good thing if we want to just roll into it.
Go ahead.
That 3-2 goal that put Edmonton ahead to stay. And what I really loved about it was that the penalty in the first place by Pierre-Luc Dubois, I saw that as a really dirty play. And it looked to me like he butt-ended Draisaitl in the neutral zone and took him down hard, and Dry got up and he was looking. I thought, uh-oh. Because his helmet was pushed back and he was kind of looking dazed and not very happy. And because he took some kind of headshot on that dirty play by Dubois. But here's the good thing. Well, Dubois just gets out of the penalty box long enough to get a minus on the play. And not only did the Oilers score, but the guy he fouled, Leon Draisaitl, is the one that pumps the puck into the net. And so that was, you know, it looked like it was going to be the winning goal, but it certainly was the one that put Edmonton ahead to stay. And it was because of a dumb penalty by Dubois, to my eye. And it actually absolutely mimicked what happened in the Vegas game at Dallas tonight, where that hack Petrangelo, the guy who tried to amputate Draisaitl's wrist in the playoffs last year, he took a real dumb penalty. Late in the second period with the score tied, he just sort of swung his hand out and smashed his opponent in the face. And they called it a major because they thought it was an elbow, and then they realized, no, he just punched him, so it's only two. But Dallas scored on the power play, and it was the game-winning goal. They won 3-2, so nice work there, Alex. Nice work there, Pierre-Luc. You both cost your team dearly in a critical playoff game with your stupid penalties.
I listened to a Kings podcast. I listened to about three of them today, actually.
Oh, yeah? Oh, wow. Sucker for punishment, eh?
Well, it was just interesting, actually. I started to find it interesting. Because hearing what
different
they're saying.
Different viewpoint, eh?
And, yeah, there was one that was really, I think it's called the Frozen Royalty podcast. It's just by guys like us, fans. And it's by far the best of the Kings podcasts, even though it's not by media guys. They're very astute hockey observers. And, man, they were not happy with Pierre-Luc Dubois.
I believe it.
this year, and that's not going to make them any happier. They were more unhappy though with the LA Kings strategy and coaching. We're going to get into that in a second, but that's what really incensed them. The potential of this team and the fact they thought had been wasted by the management and the coaching staff. The players they were picking on they really didn't like Andreas Englund, complaining about how he was unable to keep the puck on the offensive end. And they were down on Dubois, but they also said Dubois wasn't properly utilized. There is some pretty heavy criticism of what's happening there in LA land, and they're not going to be any happier. It was funny. There was either very bitter kind of resignation on the Kings podcast or what I saw as irrational exuberance that the team was going to come back, that they had seen the team play well at times and they knew what it could do. And it just reminded me of myself as an Oilers fan in years past.
We're going to get Dallas this year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that kind of that's way back, Bruce, but yes.
It is.
But in more recent years, you know, they've beat the Flames. They're going to beat the Avs. That was me two years ago. Right. Yeah. Like without having, you know, watched the Avs very much. So anyway, there was a lot of that irrational exuberance. Bruce, my second good thing is Leon Draisaitl. We didn't have him down for any mistakes at even strength on a grade A shot against, which is in some ways not the most important stat with Leon Draisaitl, but in some ways it is. Because if Leon is playing strong defensive hockey, which he is capable of doing, the Oilers are such a power. They're such a different team. They're such a powerhouse. And I really give it credit to him. He has made some mistakes on grade A shots against this playoff series at even strength, but he has really put his mind and effort into defensive hockey, I believe. And Kane. I was a skeptic about those two guys together on the same line this year, heading into the playoffs especially, but they have both come through in a big way. They're both trying to get it done on defense and putting full effort into it. So, his executioner shot, Bruce, is just so this. He's now scored combined between the playoffs and the regular season. Leon has 19 goals on the executioner's shot this season, 16 in the regular season, 3 in the playoffs, 2 tonight. This is his famous one timer shot, usually set up by McDavid. That's a career high, like that's the most he's had in his Oilers career, 19 in a season, beating last year when he had 18 in a season, 18 last playoffs, year, including playoffs last year, 14 in the regular season and 4 in the playoffs.
Right. We had 13 goals in the playoffs to lead the NHL last year, as I recall.
He keeps getting better, it seems, at the executioner shot. There just seems to be more and more and more. He had 17 the year in 21-22. He had 17 of them. So it's always a pretty high number. And he's pretty consistent with them. Yep. He scores on about a third of them. Mm-hmm. Since we've been actually tracking this.
The third of the ones that are on the net, because we don't
track the ones that miss. The third of the ones that hit the net, he actually scores 35% of the time. This year in the playoffs, he's had 8 of them and he scored 3 times.
37%.
Yeah, 38, according to my Google document calculation.
37.5, David, so we can round it whichever way.
There you go. He's such a fantastic offensive player, and he had a great play at the end of the end of the game where he rushed up the ice, excuse me. So kudos to Draisaitl for his two-way play.
He had a great play. I think in the first period, he came back hard on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And broke up a play where it looked like LA had an odd man rush. And he just put on the afterburners and came back and cleaned up that mess. And again tonight, as in the case last game, 0-0, count them, 0 giveaways and 2 takeaways. Right, which the other knock on his game over the years has been turnovers. Well, he's not been throwing away the puck, and in fact, he's been taking the puck off of the other guys on a regular basis. So, lots to like in the Big Diesel's game right now.
There's five what I would call wild cards on the Oilers, Bruce, where you don't know what you're going to get game to game. Six if you include Skinner. But Skinner's a bit more consistent. But this, I would say that they are Bouchard, Nurse, Draisaitl, Nugent, Hopkins, and Kane. And you just don't know what they're going to bring game to game. But so far in these playoffs, three of those guys have been really, really good. They've been ace, kings or aces. And Nugent, Nurse have yet to really step up in a big way. Although Nurse, you know, Nugent Hopkins, excuse me, made this, you know, good play on the goal tonight. But
six points in five games.
I think a lot of second assists on the power play.
All second assists, pretty much.
But. So, but I think if you get three out of the five wild cards, turn it up as kings or aces per game, you're probably gonna. If you get the majority of them. Because they're all exceptional players when they're at their best. That's big for the Oilers. If you get four of them, you're going to win. If you get five of them, you're definitely going to win. So, Bruce, what is your bad thing?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with what I picked in the first period, even though I had more than leveled off, I think, over the course of the night. And that's the hockey guards and that horrible, horrible, horrible bounce off the stanchion. In the last 30 seconds of the first period, where the Oilers had not even allowed, by our count, a grade A shot. It was 5-0 for Edmonton. And it's just a routine shooting, and Skinner does what Skinner should do and always does, which is go out to field the puck that goes around the glass. And for whatever reason, I mean, when's the last time we saw a bounce like that off the corner glass in Rogers Place? I can't remember one.
Well, apparently there was one in Carolina last night.
Last night there was in Carolina. Yeah, they scored two goals in 8 seconds, and the second one was exactly that. The guy shot it in, the goalie sold out to get it, and the puck went right in front of the net, and the guy tapped it in. And
I don't ever remember one, Bruce.
Bieksa and company were Hrudi.
Yeah.
Laying the blame on Skinner, like, well, because I got the lead and because I got a... it's late in the period and you don't know what the bounce is. Well, shit, you should never go out and play the puck if you don't know where the bounces are going to go. He did know, and it didn't go there because it just didn't do what it should have done. And Hrudi, I mean, I would love to hear him criticize a Calgary goalie for making a similar play, and you won't. So anyway, I absolve Skinner on that one. That was just a crappy break. Came out of the first period and it was 1-1. I was going, what is going on here? That was the first time all series the Oilers had a lead that they didn't hold. And then, of course, they got they went ahead for a while early in the second period. But the hockey guards wound up being pretty favorable to the Oilers in the longer run. So even though this is a bad thing, I'll mention that the Oilers got a call on a goal where the puck was never truly seen over the goal line. It was just sort of circumstantial. Well,
no,
it was in the glove, and the glove was over the goal line. So did you see the puck?
Yeah. Did you see the replay that Friedman showed in between periods?
No, I was doing scoring chances. I missed that.
So you missed that. So actually,
I'll go back and watch that.
Did
I see it in the webbing?
Correct. So people don't know this, but between periods, you're not listening to you're going over the grade A scoring chances, I've typically gone through them during the play, mark down what I assess, and then you go over the assessments between periods and we work through the game that way. So you missed this, but, without a doubt, without a scintilla of a doubt.
It looked like it had to be in.
It did, didn't it? And there was an angle. And I thought, honestly, when it first happened, I thought, there's no way they're going to count this as a goal. This is the Oilers and the Kings. I was gobsmacked, Bruce, that they counted that as a goal. And I don't know if they had the angle that Elliot Friedman had, if they saw that in Toronto. But maybe they did, because it shows him putting his glove back, and you see through the webbing of the puck as the puck's going in. It is way past the goal line.
It looked like it had to be. It couldn't be anywhere else.
It did look like. I thought it was the right call even without seeing that, because when you see his glove, all but the very, bottom part of his glove was across the goal line, the cuff. So, of course, it was a goal.
Yeah,
but anyway. Still, I thought, well, you can't say for sure because you didn't see it.
Yeah.
So.
Oilers against California team. I wasn't too confident that they were going to get that call. But then beyond that, five power plays to one in this game. And mind
the
you,
Fiala non-call.
The one where Fiala got called for embellishment, which could have been a two-man advantage. That definitely was a big break for Edmonton. And then in the last minute, the one that had Victor Arvidsson, among others, swearing at the refs after the game was over, on a sequence where Derek Bryan lost his stick in the 5-on-6, and he was skating around, keeping his position and selling out, trying to dive on the puck and push it over the blue line with his hand if he could. And there was some thought that he made a foul in the immediate seconds before Drysdale got the puck and burst out of the zone and drew the penalty the other way. So the Kings were really sour about that. They thought they should have had a power play in the last sort of 30 or 40 seconds.
But Bruce, we all know that Derek Ryan is an honest and hardworking player, and he would never do something like that. So I don't know what the Kings are talking about. It's just complete and utter. It's a slander of the worst form.
Last game,
high slander.
LA guy slashed the stick right out of DeHarnay's hands, right in front of the referee with 30 seconds left, and he didn't call it, with the Kings buzzing, looking for the equalizer that time. So, but then they did make the call on Drysdale because that was just too blatant. There was no way they could not call. But still, 5 power plays to 1 and 20 to 12 over the course of the series. So I won't do too much more whining about the hockey guards, except for on that one specific bad bounce.
Well, I remember years ago, 2017, when the Oilers lost to Anaheim and all the calls went to Anaheim. Oh. Bob Stauffer was forever saying on the radio, the veteran teams get the calls. And maybe finally this is happening with the Oilers. The most veteran team in the NHL with all kinds of star power and, that kind of clout. So maybe the Oilers are starting to get some of these calls, which is fantastic if that's the case.
Derek Ryan.
That's right. Derek Ryan, he's a veteran. He's a veteran, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Honest, Bruce, hardworking fellow.
Yes, definitely.
Give him a break.
Fantastic hockey player. Bruce, my bad thing in this game is a few plays by Darnell Nurse. And he's kind of been up and down this series. He's had his bad moments, and he's had lots of good moments and good games.
Had some tonight.
He did. But, man, it seems like each period there was at least one moment where you're thinking, what are you doing? So in the first period, there was and we hadn't seen this in a while. We hadn't seen this in the playoffs yet, but the bad pinch, The LA King has the puck clearly on his stick. He doesn't even get to the player to engage in him before the puck's off his stick and the Kings are down on a 2-on-1. A dangerous 2-on-1 early in the game because he's made a bad decision to pinch in the offensive end when it wasn't a 50-50 play even.
No.
It was like a 10-90 play. Mm-hmm. It was just a bad read.
Yeah.
And, some people say he plays instinctually. I'm saying he plays chaotically too much. That's the problem. He makes bad decisions. Yeah. There's too much chaos in his game, and that was an example of it. They get a 2-on-1, and it's only stymied because Corey Perry is solid on the back check.
Speedster Corey Perry.
Speedster knocks it out of the air. He's got good hands, though, and he knocked it out of the air. Next one is even worse, and it results in a goal against. It's early in the second period. 3 minutes into the second period, and the Oilers are doing a line change. The Kings defensemen have the puck deep in their own end, and a couple forwards are shifting off, which is marginal but acceptable because they are pretty deep in their own end, and there's 3 guys back, and they're doing it one at a time. So it seems like everything's okay. The Kings then pass the puck up to the neutral zone. And instead of Darnell Nurse playing it conservatively, thinking, well, we're doing some line changes here, so I better just make sure I don't give up a rush or do anything rash. He charges up and tries to make this play in the neutral zone. And again, it's not close. Yeah. It's not a 50-50 play even. And even then,
that was a 0-100 play. That was
great. Yeah. Even 50-50 wouldn't have been good enough. That's not even close. You want to be, when you're making a neutral zone play, you want it to be 80-20. Like, you want to think, I'm going to win this play almost always. And there's a small chance I could lose it if there's some bad luck, but I'm going to make this play and win it. But it wasn't, like you say, it was a 0. He had no chance of making the play.
No chance.
The puck gets passed behind him to
good
Blake
pass Lizotte. By Arvidsson.
He's charging in, and there's a really good shot, although a save would have been nice. But nice shot by Lizotte. And it's because Darnell Nurse, again, has made a chaotic. If this is an instinct to play with chaos, then forget your instincts and start to think, make better decisions out there, which he does for stretches, long stretches of play. But then there's plays like this. So I won't go on. There's maybe a few others that you can mention, but I just thought, man, when are you going to get this out of your game? You're 30 years old. You're not a teenager anymore. Like, don't do it. Don't make those plays.
That pinch on Arvidsson, like, it looked like McLeod was sort of covering Arvidsson from the side. And then all of a sudden, Darnell steps up on him. And Arvidsson makes a nice play to sort of spin around, put it on his backhand. And by doing that, Darnell has literally got no angle on the puck at all because he's so close to the boards going up on Arvidsson. And Arvidsson makes a nice little saucer pass. And I mean, Blake Lizotte, right? I mean, he's... don't expect that guy to score, but you give any NHLer a 2-on-1 and a clean shot on that, and the odd one's going to go in.
I will mention one more play because it plays into my number here, because both you and I noted this. The final Kings goal was a really nice shot pass deflection by Kempe, but it also hit Darnell Nurse and deflected in. And as you and I know, because we track these things, there is this weirdly high number of grade A shots that deflect on net from Darnell Nurse. And we actually keep track of this over the years. And I haven't gone back years. We did that in previous podcasts, and maybe I'll do it for a post coming up. But just this season, I just looked at the numbers for this season. Bruce said even strength, Darnell Nurse deflected 10 grade A shots on net. That was more than all the other Edmonton Oilers defensemen combined at even strength. All the other guys were at 9 in total. So Ekholm, Kulak, CeCe, Bouchard, Daharnay, they combined for 9. Daharnay, who plays a similar kind of defensive game against, you know, like a defensive defenseman, he had 1. Yeah. Great a shot deflect off him on net. Mm-hmm. Nurse had 10. So yeah. I don't know what to think about that. Like it's like that was just seemingly a bad luck play that it hit. Kempe makes this nice play, puts it on net, and then it deflects off Nurse's back into the net. And it's like, boy, that's just bad luck. But it stops being bad luck when year after year after year, you're way ahead of everybody else.
Way ahead. Not a first time, but he was far ahead of the rest.
Don't know what to say about it. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time, essentially.
Yeah, well, combine those with goalie screens and...
I should have done that.
I'd be doing a little bit of teeth clenching, I think. Because he's pretty sure he leads the world in goalie screens. And he does make some big hero shot blocks, right? Like he does make positive plays in there. It's not like everything is bad and wrong, right? But a lot of it doesn't work out very well because he's making a better door than window or... you know, pucks hitting him and bouncing into the net somehow.
Yeah. We know he's a hard worker. He's an academic All-American in the OHL. We know, like, he at the end of the season, he and Jim Playfair used to go, they'd go month by month, like they'd talk throughout the off season and go over all the plays. Mm-hmm. Okay, what should I have done here? What should I do? Like, he is a serious student of the game. And he plays a strong game much of the time. But there's some mistakes. Leave it at that. What's your number?
I'm going to go with the number 12. And that is the number of penalties resulting in power plays that Oilers took in this entire five-game series. Just 12 times did they visit the penalty box. And then the second 12... it's the 12 penalties that they killed in the series, 12 for 12 for a perfect 100%, completely blanking the Los Angeles Kings power play. over the course of an entire series, and in a series where Edmonton's own power play was a dominant force. Well, between the two special teams, that was entirely the difference in the series. You know, Oilers outscored LA 22-13, and at even strength, it was 13-all, and special teams, it was 9-0. And you could stretch the point a little bit and say those two goals they scored tonight, just when the guy emerged from the box and didn't enter the play, were essentially power play goals. We've scored them routinely, anything 3-4 seconds beyond a power play as a in our scoring chances as a power play, because essentially it's a 5-on-4 opportunity until the guy actually makes his way back into the zone. So if you want to count those, I mean, you want to stretch it, it was like 11 power play goals for Edmonton and 0 for Los Angeles. And it was like all of the difference in the series.
So the Oilers penalty kill was fantastic. And yes, let's give credit where it's due. Vinny Deharnay led the team in the playoffs 13 minutes. Nugent-Hopkins, 12 minutes. Ekholm, 11 minutes. Cody Ceci, 10 minutes. Darnell Nurse, 10 minutes. Matthias Janmark, 9 minutes. Ryan McLeod, 8 minutes. Warren Fogle, 6 minutes. Adam Henrique, 5 minutes. Sam Carrick, 5 minutes. So those are the main players on the penalty kill. Deharnay has been fantastic. He really has been solid on defense in his own zone. And a lot of the jitters that we saw last year in the playoffs are gone. Yeah. Which is a huge relief, and he's just really playing solid. He's such a smart player, right? He does read the play very well.
He has great defensive instincts.
He really does. Yeah, he's really. Yeah. You know, he had that bad stretch when he got bumped up the lineup. He was playing with Nurse there. That didn't work out at all. I see you raise your eyebrows there. And
interesting coincidence.
Yeah. It is, but he's playing well with Kulak. Okay. Our conundrum. Go ahead, Bruce. Did you have?
I was just going to say, Robbie Brown was saying on one of the radio stations or podcasts, he was saying that when the other team has puck on the power play, if Deharnay's out there, they can't even see the net.
Yeah, he's huge.
That would have a psychological impact, I think. That was an interesting way to put it. And of course, he was an attacking player, so I thought, yeah, that's a legit point of view. Like, how are you going to get around that mountain?
Indeed. All right, Bruce, let's get to our conundrum. And our conundrum is the Oilers relatively easily handled the Kings here in 5 games. That's a really good signal for this Oilers team. They haven't won in the McDavid era. They have not won a series in 5 games. They've won them in 6 and 7. So that's
sweet next year.
That's right. That's really good for the Oilers. And they did it. If you count those two late power play goals as power play goals tonight, Bruce, it was at even strength, the Kings had 13 goals and the Oilers had 11. But in special teams, it was 0-11 for the Oilers. So the conundrum is, can the Oilers beat a better team? When they go up against Vancouver and Nashville or Colorado or Dallas and Vegas going down the road here, can they do what they did to the Kings against a better team? And one of the things I want to point out about the Kings is, and this is one of the things they were talking about on the LA podcast, and I've been thinking it, I thought it from this first time I saw the Kings set up on the power play in these playoffs, I thought it, the Oilers are going to score on this penalty kill unit. They are going to feast on this penalty, even though they were second in the NHL, because they play right in the Oilers' hands by being so passive. I mean, Kevin Bieksa talked about them being in this diamond, and then they condensed it even more to like a 3-1 formation. They packed more guys in front of the net. That is not the way to stop the Oilers' penalty kill, is by packing it into the slot. They love to have time and space to make plays, the Oilers, and they will dissect you. They will rip you apart. And I don't know what they were thinking. All they had to do was go back 2 weeks and watch the Dallas Stars play against the Edmonton Oilers to see how you penalty kill against the Edmonton Oilers. I don't think any other team is going to play this way, Bruce. No. I was hesitant. I didn't talk about it during this series, but I mean, Rob Brown's talking about it on the radio as well. You cannot be passive. Dallas got after the Edmonton Oilers. You get after them. You attack them. You don't give them time and space because they don't want to throw the puck. How do you beat full court pressure? How do you beat that? That tight man-on-man defense, you take the puck hard to the net, you throw it at the net, and you go for a rebound. These Oilers guys, they don't want to do that. They want to make plays. So you play this zone on the penalty kill, this tight, packed zone. That is a bad, bad strategy. And this is one of the things. I have no doubt they're going to come after the Oilers in the next rounds of the playoffs. That this weird strategy that the Kings used isn't going to be employed by other teams. Although some of them do it, some of them, I don't think you could persuade the coaches not to do it. The coaches who buy into that, that's just what they do. So me talking about it isn't going to change their minds. But it's a disaster, and it proved to be an incredible disaster for the Kings, and they never really changed it. They were just so unbelievably outcoached due to their own stubborn stupidity. And they're not stupid people, but this was a stupid strategy. And if you don't change it, maybe, I don't know, can you change it? Be more aggressive? I think maybe you can't. Maybe you're so drilled into it, but I think you could.
Well, what they were incapable of handling was Connor McDavid's skating on the power play, which is one thing that sets Edmonton's power play apart from many other teams. It's not just a system where everybody has their place and they move around within their little zone. McDavid is everywhere, right? The other guys kind of have their place that they set up, but McDavid, he'll be pursuing the puck behind the net, circling out of the corner. He'll be carrying it across the high slot, or he'll set up here, there, and everywhere, and constantly in motion. And one of the reasons he's able to find Draisaitl as often as he is that he creates lanes as he moves. And if the other guys are stationary, well, those lanes are guaranteed to show up at some point. And he's very good at, passing the puck at the right moment and making the pass and getting it across the lane. And of course, Leon's always ready to let fly unless he's ready to make a one toucher back to Bouchard so he can let fly. They did a lot of things on the power play and scored some very beautiful goals. But the passive approach, McDavid in particular, he had 9 power play points in the series, right? 3 at even strength and 9 on the power play. And of the 3 at even strength, one of them, I guess, came just at the end of a power play tonight because he wasn't involved in the other one. But the 3-2 goal was Draisaitl from McDavid and Bouchard, and it was actually Bouchard passed it to Draisaitl, he passed it to McDavid, he passed it to Draisaitl, he passed it to McDavid, he passed it back to Draisaitl, and he scored because they were just controlling it because McDavid was just flying around the offensive zone. And it's quite thrilling to watch. And David, you may remember we had this discussion several years ago about the Oilers' power play, the year that they stunk.
How like static
way
McDavid
down
was
at the bottom of the league, and we talked about it, and one of us, possibly me, said that McDavid needs to move. Setting him up on the half wall, which is what they were doing, made no sense. Like, there's lots of good half wall players, and he was one, but one thing he could do was be a more dynamic offensive player. And then around that time, I don't know the exact timeline between the bad year and the hiring of Glenn Gulitzin, but it's been a while since Scully's been around, and the team's been doing well on the power play. And either he listens to the podcast, or my bet, he figured it out all on his own, that he's got this incredible dynamic offensive weapon, and dynamic weapons work best when they're actually dynamic as opposed to constrained within a system.
Yeah, they used to have him anchored up. It was actually a double bad play because they used to have him on the right half wall where Draisaitl should be for his one timer. And they would have him there kind of anchored there. And it was ridiculous. And the analogy that I used at the time to describe the problem, it was like right out of the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. There's a famous scene there where the Sundance Kid, who's has this reputation for being the best gunfighter in the West, someone's taunting him and says, "Yeah, are you really that good, kid? Can you really shoot?" And he says, okay, shoot these cans, kid. And Robert, the Sundance kid played by Robert Redford, aims his gun. He's standing still and he misses them each, you know, fires off five shots, misses this target, right each time. Mm-hmm. And the guy's laughing at him. Then the Sundance kid says, can I move? And he says, okay. And then the son starts moving around as he shoots. And it's that movement.
Ping, ping, ping.
Ping, 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 ping. He got it every time. And that's what McDavid needed to be, was the Sundance kid on the move, making plays. Having him standing still, making plays was ridiculous, as we said at the time. It was as bad as the King strategy is on the PK, and they changed it. Bruce, the Oilers are going to play a team that's going to come after them mm-hmm. on the penalty kill as they go through the playoffs. I don't know if it's going to be next round, but they are. Vegas comes after you. Dallas comes after you. They are going to play a team that comes after you. And so my question is, when that happens, what happens? And that's going to be a huge challenge for this power play.
Sure.
Because do you recall the Dallas game that I'm talking about, the most recent Dallas game?
Oh, yeah.
That penalty kill.
5-0 game. Yeah, they were all over.
Brutal. And yeah, so it's going to be, and it's going to entail a change in style, which is going to be difficult. And I think what did the Kings in on the PK was, because they had such tremendous success, they're the second best team in the league on the PK, playing this style that they have. They're thinking in the regular season, we can't move off this. This is like, we're the best. We're one of the best units in the NHL. And I'm glad they had that success in the regular season, because a team that didn't have such confidence in their tactics might have changed them, but they did and they didn't. So they didn't.
Just like the Winnipeg Jets were the best defensive team in the NHL until suddenly they weren't.
Yes. Oh, the Avs are scary. Yeah. The Avs are scary. Listen, I've been watching. I usually don't watch, but I think the Oilers have such a great chance to win the Cup this year. I've been looking at some of their future adversaries, and man, there are some really good teams out there. Both Vegas and Dallas are fantastic hockey teams, and the Avs are super scary. They are an unbelievable attacking hockey team. So. The challenge is, and Vancouver and Nashville are both hardworking and really good teams. So, but I do think the Oilers got lucky, Bruce, playing the Kings and not Vegas. I mean, that was good news. So the problem is that even strength against the Kings, they got outscored 13-11.
Yeah.
So this is another reason to be concerned.
Yeah. Well, there's always reasons to be concerned. At the end of the day, I mean, they did win four games and lose one in overtime. Their special teams were special, and that was the difference. And in other series, you know, maybe the special teams will take a dip and something else will have to step up and take the place. Like, I don't think we saw Edmonton at their best in the series, but they did enough right. I found it, by the way. It was 2017-18, and this was the year Edmonton, I added them up, 31 power play goals in 82 games. 31 power play goals. Draisaitl led the team with 6. David had 5. Nuge had 4.
Who coached that power play?
A bunch of guys like Lucic and Kajula and Letestu had 3, you know. And I think they hired, this was 2018.
Was it Woodcroft?
I think they hired Gulitsyn right after. It might have been, I'm not sure which coach had the responsibility specifically for the power play.
Yeah, I think it was Woodcroft.
But they were one of the.
I might be wrong. Don't quote me.
Yeah, they were one of the worst.
It was such a we were railing about it all year long, frankly. I mean, we went on and on and on about
that year. Yeah.
Yeah. It repeatedly.
They missed the playoffs, and one of the reasons was their power play sucked. And we were going, they've got these offensive guys. I mean, clearly, McDavid and Draisaitl were still on the rise at that point, but McDavid was scoring all his points at even strength at that time. And now he's getting a large percentage of them on the PP.
So to write the even strength problem, I'm going to call it a problem, is they need a couple things. They need really solid decisions by the defenseman up ice in terms of pinching and reading the play. And they need, one of the things I think they can do better is they can be a bit more ferocious on the forecheck. And they need all 12 players to do this. They're to beat those teams, Bruce, they're going to have to crank it up on the forecheck. So that includes like people like Nugent Hopkins, for instance, who hasn't been strong on the forecheck yet. I mean, Kane is setting the standard. He had some nasty hits. He's bringing it. Hyman's bringing it. But Fogel's going to have to be better on the forecheck.
Yeah. Fogel has to be better, period.
Yeah. There's just going to have to be all of the forwards are going to have to get in there with a mindset like just to be maniacs on the forecheck. The defensemen are going to have to be like solid citizens in terms of their decision-making in the offensive zone and the neutral zone, in terms of not giving up odd man rushes. They did pretty well there, but they could have done better. And they're going to need solid goaltending. Those three things, I think, will be the keys for them at even strength. And Skinner was, I would say, okay to good in this series, but not great. And they're probably going to need him to be great. Let's say he was great in one game here in this series. They're going to probably need him to be great every second game to get by the best teams. So if they get those three things going, yeah, they can do it. And they're certainly capable of this. But I don't want to be irrationally exuberant and to think that the best game that we've seen from the Oilers is the game we're going to see repeatedly when they need to bring it out. They might do that, or they might not, and we'll see.
No. And by the way, Glenn Gulutson was hired by the Oilers on May 25th, 2018. So he took the power play, and since then they've gone from 30, like they were like 29th in the league or something. I'd have to look it up, but they're way down in the doldrums. And since they've quickly developed into a powerhouse, and they've remained one for years, and this year they took a tiny step back, but come the playoffs, wow, they just went nuclear.
Yeah. Their power play is going to be hard to stop because of McDavid's movement. And one thing I really liked from McDavid on the power play, and Drysdale's shot, one thing I liked from McDavid on the power play, Bruce, was on his rushes in, sometimes he just tries to get the blue line. He made himself a threat to take it to the net early in the series. A few times he tried to go through the whole team. I think it's really good when he tries to do that now and then, because it gets that, it plants that in their head that he's not just, you know, going to back off. So they have to back off as he's coming in. He charges in hard a few times, tries to score. They back off. They back off, and then the Oilers can set up. Once the Oilers do set up, it's hard to play aggressive against them, because that's just how power plays work, especially really highly skilled ones. So to force the other team into a more passive formation, that initial thrust by McDavid is a key part of it. And he was doing that, trying to go hard to the net himself. Mm-hmm. And that's I'm glad that he does it, even though it's not always effective. I think he's got to do that.
And not to mention gaining the zone. I mean, we're talking about movement within the zone, but McDavid bringing the puck through the neutral zone and into the zone, I don't think the Kings were able to stop him in his tracks at any point.
Hardly at all.
Yeah, so.
They didn't even try is the weird thing. Like, this is another, they were a weirdly passive team. I think if the Kings had forechecked hard, if they had gone with a hard forecheck against the Oilers and an aggressive power play, aggressive penalty kill against the Oilers, this series would not have ended in five games, put it that way. I think a lot of this is on the strategy, the tactics that they were using in these games. And I agree with the LA Kings fans who were making these same critique.
Maybe they shouldn't have fired old Flat Top when they did.
Well, I don't know if he had the same system or not, but I mean, he had the same passive neutral zone.
He had the same
results
last year, didn't he?
A little bit better.
I think the Oilers went 9-for-18 in the series last year.
I mean, you can see why they do this too, though, the Kings system, because they aren't the most talented team. But, you know, these Kings fans are making the point that they traded for players like, you know, they had promoted players like Englund, and they didn't like Gavrikov much, although I like Gavrikov myself, but they weren't a big fan of that. And they were really, really bitter. They have this player, Brant Clark, who was a high draft pick a few years ago, and he's just he is the killer kingpin offensive defenseman in the AHL.
Supposedly, yeah.
He puts up a point a game in the AHL. He's a dynamic offensive player in the AHL. And he's in right now, when their power play couldn't get anything done, he's in the AHL. And that was just killing them. Like, they could not figure out that. Well, and neither can I. I guess
they beat Bakersfield, so there's that.
They
couldn't call him up when the Oilers were able to call up all the guys that got eliminated.
Yeah. So
the master plan.
They can hang their crown on that. I don't want to gloat about other teams losing. As a fan now, and having been through lots of seasons of losing, it just hurts. It hurts when your team loses, and it really does. So I have a lot of sympathy for Kings fans right now. I can understand why they're frustrated, and I feel their pain.
They've got a lot of good players, and they pushed pretty hard. You know, I mean, three series in a row, you know, they finished third, Oilers finished second, and, you know, they won six games, and Edmonton won 12. And there was a lot of games that were up for grabs. And, you know, they had some, you know, some good times. But, you know, their sort of core players, Kopitar and Doughty, are really long in the tooth. You know, I mean, they won the Stanley Cup 10 and 12 years ago, those two guys.
Yeah, Kopitar's not the player that he was. Like, I think Doughty is still close.
Good, yeah.
Doughty is really good still, but Kopitar he's a step slower. Like, he's not the offensive force that he used to be.
Yeah.
And they're slow in developing. Little Byfield's come along, but it's taken a while. And Clark, maybe Brant Clark will, you know, I don't know if he'll, I can't say. Maybe they're right to slow cook him there.
He's Evan Bouchard in waiting, you know. Oilers fans were striving for him to be in the lineup earlier than he eventually was, and in retrospect, there's nothing really says they were wrong, meaning the fans that wanted him getting the push.
No, because
when he finally did get the chance, he sure took it.
Yeah, let me just let's just go look at this Brant Clark character for a second on HockeyDB. He, in 50 games for the Ontario Reign this season, he had 46 points.
Nice.
And so
he
this
really
is
a, piled him in. I think he had 2 points a game close to it in the OHL last year.
So last year in the OHL, 61 and 31.
Yeah.
Correct, Bruce.
It's unreal.
23 points in 12 playoff games. So he was, he's just a rookie pro this year. And they just decided he had 6 points in 16 games for the Kings, and he was minus six for the Kings. So they thought, we have Jordan Spence. He's a bit further along. He's a good offensive player. But these guys wanted to see Spence and Clark on the team. So,
and we've traded away Sean Durzi and Sean Walker. And Brock Faber that they traded to get Kevin Fiala, you know, the Rookie of the Year finalist. Brock Faber, frankly, I would vote for him for the Calder personally, but
he had
a very fine year.
In terms of disappointing Kings in the playoffs, I mean, Fiala and Dubois have to be right, and probably Talbot. I didn't think he played well either. Have to be at the top of the list. Like, I've seen Fiala be really scary as a player. Not this series. Maybe it was his line mates. Like, who do they have him out there with? Like, it was Arvidsson, Moore, and Deneau. So he wasn't on either of the top two lines. So maybe he was misused. They just didn't want to have an offensive player in a prime scoring role for some reason on their team. But he had 73 points in 82 games,
yeah.
Fiala.
Yeah,
so
he
didn't
score.
Yeah, he has been a scary player in the past, but not this series. He just faded away. So any final thoughts, Bruce, that you have? Can the Oilers beat a better team?
Well, I think they can. You know, they're just really getting going here. And, you know, we're seeing some players playing with significant resolve. I mean, the way Drysdale is playing, and they got him this year, the first time in the playoffs that they've been on the team together, that those two guys wound up playing separate lines for an entire series without really any time the coach defaulting, oh, better put them back together again because we're down a goal. You know, the odd shift here and there, and certainly power play, of course, but Drysdale has got a certain look in his eye, David. I love the way he's playing, and I'm loving the 200-foot game he's playing. I wrote about it this morning for the Call to Hockey. And he's delivering the goods in all corners of the rink. When you got a guy doing that in your second line, you know, it reminds me of the look in Mark Messier's eye in 1984. So, I mean, we'll see. It's early days. And there's lots of very good teams out there. There's no sort of clear path. You know, they're not going to be facing Murray Bannerman and the Chicago Blackhawks in the conference finals, right? So,
well, the good news is that the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators are in a fierce series. Lots of bad blood, and they're going to another game, and hopefully they'll go to seven, and hopefully Vegas and Dallas, who are also in the same kind of fierce and nasty series, will go to seven. So have it out, boys. Yeah. Go at it.
Well, yeah, Oilers did what Vancouver couldn't do, which was close out the series in game five at home. And now Vancouver has to make a 4.5-hour plane ride to Nashville. And even if they win, they have to make another 4.5-hour plane ride back to Vancouver. And the Oilers, by winning tonight, they avoided a similar scenario of an extra trip to L.A. Win or lose, you'd rather just not make that trip unless, you know, you're 2-2 or, you know, down in the series and, you need extra games to win the series. They had a chance to close it out tonight, and they got it done. And that's huge. Gives them a few days to get their breath and get their bruises looked after a little bit and get Matthias Ekholm's eye all fixed up and, you know, whatever little knocks. And because Kings play a hard and sometimes dirty game, and I know there'll be guys that are banged up a bit. I think maybe McDavid even is one of them. And a few days off is just what the doctor ordered. And if they can spend the evenings in their lazy boys watching Vancouver and Nashville beat the crap out of each other, so much the better.
When's
bring
the earliest?
Bring me overtime.
Yeah. When's the earliest they would play? Saturday?
No, that's not possible now because, Vancouver, I don't think, anyway, Vancouver could win it. Is it tomorrow night they play game six in Nashville? But there's no way they would jump the gun and play on Saturday, maybe Sunday, but Nashville might win tomorrow.
They now wait till all the series are over, do they not?
Pretty much, yeah.
They never used to do that in the
NBA does it where they'll start the next round before, you know, game seven is done in some other series. But NHL is pretty straight-laced that they like to just separate their rounds completely.
Friday, the Canucks play the Predators.
Friday?
Okay, yeah, and so the Stars play the Golden Knights on Friday.
Okay.
So if both of those teams go to seven, those games would mm-hmm. be on Sunday.
Right.
And so the Oilers could have almost like they could have 3 or 4 days just rest days.
Yeah, they don't know who they're playing, but they can just sort of take care of themselves and, have some good practices and, you know, prepare for, obviously it's going to be one in Nashville or Vancouver. But Friday and Sunday were game six and seven in our series as well, if necessary. Well, thank you, Oilers. They are not necessary. You got the job done in five. That's fantastic.
Yeah, a great signal. And in terms of answering our conundrum, the most important one, I think, is the fact they got it done in five. That's the best evidence that down the road against a tougher team, the Oilers are going to be able to come through because they came through when they needed to in game five here to give themselves rest. Mm-hmm. So absolutely crucial. They got the job done. If they did it now, maybe they can do it again. All right. Let's leave it there, Bruce.
Okay. I got one small mess to clean up from last podcast. Let me make mistakes most podcasts, but this was a really bad one.
Uh-oh.
I talked about my number was the 3-1-0 games that the Oilers won in the playoffs, and the fact there were four, and I completely missed one. 2017, the game three at San Jose. Cam Talbot, after a 2-0 shutout in game two, where Zach Cassian won a lot of fans with some big hits and a big goal. Zach Cassian, again, scored the only goal. Cam Talbot got a back-to-back shutout, and the Oilers won 1-0 in San Jose. And the other mistake I made in the exact same segment was I mentioned who the goal scorers were, Kevin McClelland in 84 and Ryan Smith in 97. I didn't mention the damn goalies. I'm an old goalie. So shout-out to Grant Fuhr for his fantastic shutout in the Nassau County Coliseum, and to Curtis Joseph for his double overtime 1-0 victory for the Oilers in 97. So let's get the full record out there. 4-1-0 playoff wins in all in different eras and all on the road and all in series that Edmonton won. This is the key thing. All of those wins keyed an Edmonton victory in the series.
Well, Bruce, we're going to have to downgrade you. You've been known as the man.
That's bad.
You've been known as the man with the mind of a titanium trap, mm-hmm. But we're going to have to downgrade you to the steel trap, a mind like a steel trap. So I'm sorry.
The old steel trap, she ain't what she used to be.
All right. Thanks for talking today.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.